This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. We've heard how 89-year-old Morris Bennett of Woodlake flew gliders with the 94th Squadron of the 439th Troop Carrier Group. They earned a Presidential Unit Citation for their work on D-Day. He stayed behind in England while fellow glider pilots aided in the invasion of southern France a couple months later. And by September of 1944, the Allies were preparing a massive airborne and ground assault that would include over 2,000 gliders in addition to other air forces. It was called Operation Market Garden, and it was aimed at pushing German forces back through the Netherlands and across the Rhine River in the hopes of ending the war in Europe by Christmas. That's not exactly how it unfolded, and it would be another dangerous mission that Morris Bennett was fortunate to survive.
They moved the group to Châteaudun in France, and I was our main base until the European war was over. Next mission then after that, when the combat mission we had, was Arnhem, Nijmegen, we had Grosbeck, and we had the 82nd Airborne is what we took in, and we didn't have enough pilots, so we didn't even have a co-pilot. And part of the equipment I had, there was a trailer with all the signal equipment, all the electronics for the communications for the whole group. So I had a trailer with that and the two people that worked with it. Some of them were shot down on the way in, but we knew it was going to be a rough mission. It was about 3 hours on tow, and we left somewhere around 7 in the morning. It was in September. We had May West, but I put an extra flak suit under my seat and went over my legs and went over my deal. And right after we hit the coast of the roads, and we were shot at by ground fire, barges on the bottom, and then we were shot at also by fighters. But the Spitfires came in and the P-51s came in, our defense boys, and they took those out and they took out the other deal. But I could see the tracers coming down the, you see them going through the side of the tow ship and come out on down the tow line. And then by that time they were going through ours. And that was probably the scariest mission that I had as far as wondering if I was even going to go on the ground. But after we got over the barges and got a little further inland, we was able to land. But I was picking up ground fire after I hit the CP. And we landed about 10:30 in the morning. The paratroopers were dropping at the same time we dropped. Normally, paratroopers come in ahead of us and clear the ground before we get in. But we were on the ground at the same time that they were. First lieutenant ran over to me and he says, I kind of cracked up a little bit. I mean, I had to get on the ground because I was being shot at pretty heavy.
And that glider, with what it's made out of, doesn't take fire very well.
And so I landed a little bit faster than I normally would land, and it was sandy, and I nosed over. So I just knocked the nose end of it off a little bit, but the load and everything else was on the ground in good shape. I landed right by an ammunition dump. There were all kinds of ammunition and guns and everything. There were stacks of them that the Germans had got together. And I says, I think I'm okay. In other words, of course, I was kind of dusty and dirty. Of course, you got probably 30 pounds of equipment, your helmet and all your other gear and the ammunition, and your legs are full of groceries for 3 or 4 days or whatever the case would be. You have everything on you that you don't have no chance of picking nothing up. You're all ready to go. So when you landed, you got out of there. We went over to this castle, and the German officers had just left it, having breakfast. Everything was still ham and eggs and everything just on the table when we landed. And so we stayed there that afternoon, and then that night they marched us downtown, and we took the bridge that crossed the Rhine, the 82nd Airborne. Mortar fire was hitting us pretty heavy. So they come over and said, in other words, well, you glider pilots, you are guards. You're going to be MPs. So I was an MP for 3 weeks with about 10 glider pilots, and we had over 3,000 prisoners. And we took an apple orchard that had a high deer fence around it. They couldn't come in and reinforce us or bring in any more troopers, and they tried to by air, but the weather was bad. And they made some parav drops. So after parav dropped it, they dropped in the German lines, and the Germans got them. And this was at Nijmegen, or the Arnhem, which is a bridge too far. There's a movie on the bridge too far. Well, this is where it was. And so about 3 weeks, we were relieved. They finally got through to us. The British came in and with the tanks and relieved us, and we went back. And I don't even remember what we, how we ate. We didn't eat very much. In other words, I know that, because all we had was K rations with Cracker Jack boxes. But anyway, we got back on this Army 6x6. And then while I was sitting there, like we were sitting on benches on that thing, and one of the guys that was with us, in other words, he didn't unload his gun or did something, and it went off in the truck bed. But in other words, none of us was hurt. So
it's just in a growing list of close calls. That was part of Operation Market Garden. And before long, the Battle of the Bulge would come along.
Well, the next one was resupply on Bastogne. But what happened on that, I was ready to go. I was to take. It was on December 25th, and I was supposed to take off. The weather turned bad, and I really loaded, and all I had was ammunition to resupply. And went out the next morning. I didn't have to fly it because they brought in another somebody else, because they said I already had flown enough missions.
So you were going to fly a glider into Bastogne in the middle of the Battle of the Bulge.
Right. And I was set to go on that, but in other words, then I didn't fly it. So somebody else flew my glider, but it was wrecked, and the guy that flew it was killed. It was on the pilots that took it in the next day.
Well, I was about to imagine that fate for you if you would have flown it, and there's no mystery to it when you tell me that. How do you account for all of those situations where it should have been you and it wasn't?
I think the old boy up above is watching over me, and he had something more for me to do. That's the only thing that I've had, because I had too many of them that... It just wasn't done till it could have been 5 minutes or 10 minutes or an hour later. So then the next mission we had was crossing the Rhine at Wesel, which was only 50 miles by on the river from where we dropped in September, or the ridge on the Grossbeck drop. But I had, I think, just troopers, and I flew a CG-4, and we flew a two gliders on the same tow ship. We came in across the Rhine River Valley, and it broke out of the smoke about 200 feet, and all I had was an apple orchard ahead of us. Just landed down between the apple orchard and took the wings off, the outside wings. Came in pretty high and slipped and straightened out just before got where I was supposed to land. And of course, it took some real good flying there to do it. Flying by your seat of pants again. Landed, and we were right up against an 88. By this time, that the German army couldn't hit the airplanes at a low altitude. They had to be up pretty high before they could hit them. They didn't know how to set their guns to shoot at 500 feet. But they got to where they were, there the tail end, and we landed within maybe 50 feet of a German 88 gun emplacement. And my crew, my ground people, was able to take them over right then.
So the troopers you were carrying took out that 88. Otherwise, you would have been blown to smithereens.
That's right. In other words, that was it. And then the next morning, we stayed that night, whole night in foxholes, and we took parachutes that had been dropped and wrapped them around to keep warm. And next morning, we went back, and that was the end of my fighting.
But you would add C-47 navigator duties, and in that role, fly resupply missions and also carry some pretty memorable passengers.
Well, C-47, I think, would haul 15 or 20 people normally. In other words, we'd have 40 or 50 of these prisoners that we took out of those concentration camps. And we have a nurse on board, and we had to be deloused, in other words, because everybody had lice.
To see the shape that those prisoners were in, what was that like emotionally, just to see people?
That was probably the worst thing that of everything that I can remember. In other words, I mean, that's why I support the service and the people there, because, in other words, unless you see it, people can't believe how the shape that those prisoners was in.
What did they look like?
If a person that would weigh 180 to 200 pounds, weigh 85 or 90 pounds, it'd be like going to a rest home where all the people had cancer, and you could smell it when you walk in. In other words, and you could smell them when you even before you got there.
These weren't American prisoners of war. These were people that had been in the concentration camps?
They were both. We saw a lot of the prisoners of war, or our prisoners of war back, and the people that was in concentration camps, both ways. And most of our soldiers weren't, or airmen that was there, they weren't dilapidated or, like the concentration camp people were. The concentration camp people were in really bad shape.
And at that time, had you been aware at all of what was happening in those concentration camps, or was this just a complete shock to your system that people could be in this kind of condition?
No, I had no idea. I don't think anybody would. I don't think anybody would realize it even now, unless you were there, shape that they'd be in.
And when you see something like that, I mean, obviously everything that you've been through is pretty incredible. When you see something like that, does that make it seem more important to you to talk about it, to make sure people know about what happened in World War II?
Well, for 40 years, 35 or 40 years, I didn't even mention my overseas time because I guess we kept it. Most of us kept it. Kept pretty well in herself, even when we got together.
You're one of the last ones left. There weren't very many glider pilots to begin with.
There's about roughly 5,000 glider pilots trained to start with.
How many do you think are still around?
Probably 1,500, maybe, in thereabouts. There's only two in the valley that I know of.
What would you say you're most proud of?
Being able to do the job that I did, I guess, without getting hurt.
What was it like to come home when the war was over and you were done?
They flew us back in B-24s. I had a buddy, and a lot of us was able to even, there was only two or three of us in a B-24, but in other words, they flew back, and some of them went and had a buddy, Bob Baker. He was in another one, and they said, off to our wing. In other words, they developed trouble. They went in after going through all the deals that we both of us have went through together, in other words, and flown together. According to the reunions and everything, that he was killed in on the Vasa mission when we were down. But I know when he went down on the way back.
Another it could have just as easily been you moment. You got back to the States, thought for sure you'd be flying gliders in an impending invasion of Japan. But while you had a short leave, you had to make sure to see your wife, who'd been waiting patiently and praying for you back home in California.
I picked up my wife and we went to...
Don't gloss over that. You hadn't seen your wife in how long?
3.5 years.
And I'm sure there are days you didn't think you were going to see her again, right?
No, I always figured I was going to make it. She used to tell me, in other words, a few years past, before she passed away 10 years ago, she said, you think you're going to live forever. In other words, I know I'm not, but that's what... She always said that you think you're going to go forever, but we went to Cambria Pines when she had an uncle over that had retired from the service several years before. So we went over the coast and spent a couple of days there, and during that time, they dropped the bomb on Japan, and the war was over, and I would report back to San Diego. I got a separation from active duty, but never no discharge. I'm still separated from active duty.
So when you think about the fact that you're... children would have never been born, your grandchildren and great-grandchildren would have never been born if you hadn't survived all those situations where it could have been you. What does that make you thankful for now?
I don't know. You don't really think too much about it, really, but I think we got a pretty good country up to the right to present time. We're in a bad shape, but maybe we'll get it straightened around.
And for people that weren't alive then, what do you want them to know about the guys that you served with? What all those brave men and women did 70 years ago, what do you think we need to remember about that time in our history?
Well, I think we should remember that some people don't believe in God, but in other words, I do. I believe that he had his hand in watching over what I was supposed to be doing. And so I think, in other words, I think we still need God in our country and behind our deal. I don't think this idea of taking over and going to a socialist type of country and letting the government run everything. I think the people should run the country as what we did back when I was a kid.
Well, I just want to say on behalf of our listeners, thank you for serving our country and thank you for telling us some of those stories. If we park a CG-4 at the airfield down the road, you going to climb in behind the wheel?
Yeah, I could.
Did anybody doubt what that answer was going to be? That's Morris Bennett of Woodlake, California. He was 89 when we first aired that interview. Remember, you can find photos of Mr. Bennett and all our guests on Facebook. Just type in Hometown Heroes Radio. We're out of time this time around. Hoping you'll join us again next time. I'm Paul Leffler reminding you again that freedom is not free.